Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. And to all of you stopping in here on YouTube under the Comical Sports Memes channel, welcome in everybody, however and whenever it is you're stopping in. We are back for another week here on the Take It Easy radio show, and boy, do we have a lot to work with here today. This is going to be a fun-ass show. I've got a good feeling. Before we get going here, make sure to follow us on Instagram, at Comical Sports Memes, at Take It Easy Podcast, and at Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Please follow all three of those. Also, check out the Take It Easy Podcast. We've got episodes every single day, Monday through Friday, as well as Wired Up on Sundays. Today's episode had some NBA talk, Anthony Davis stats, a little bit on the Clippers, which of course we'll cover a little bit of that coming up here today at some point, because how could you not? It's the storyline in sports right now. So check that out as well. Also, of course, if you're listening on Open Talk Radio, follow on YouTube. If you're listening on YouTube, follow over on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. With that being said, let's get down to business, people. With the way we like to start off this podcast, which is just by going around the landscape and schedule and sports, which is usually just baseball. But tonight, we've got like three good-ass NBA games. At the very least, Wizards and 76ers will be interesting on the NBA TV, even though I probably won't be watching that one. Because the Hawks play the Knicks in Game 2 with a heated rivalry going down right now. So that should be really fun tonight. Three massive NHL games going down tonight. Game 6, Pens and Islanders. Game 6, Panthers Lightning. Game 6, Golden Knights versus the Minnesota Wild. All three of those will be headed to the brink tonight, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on here on the Take It Easy radio show, because I just want to organize my thoughts around hockey in preparation for tomorrow's Take It Easy podcast. Three game sixes all in one day. So even if you're big into the Hawks and Knicks, which I said was the second TV game, tonight is the second TV game for me. It's also just a second TV series, but Hawks and Knicks is slowly upgrading because, oh my goodness, you're telling me that me, who's been on the Warriors South bandwagon for about a year and a half now, really two full NBA seasons to be exact, I've been on the Warriors South hype train in Atlanta, and you're telling me that Trae Young is going to be a villain and that New York is going to hate him and he's going to silence the Garden? And Knicks fans, I feel like Knicks fans are trying to like cram 20 years of memories into 1 year, and it's just not really working that well because they don't know when they're going to be back. So they're just like, okay, we've got the Garden, the mysticism of the Garden. Here's Spike Lee and here's Tracy Morgan, and oh, here's Trae Young. We're going to chant F Trae Young, even though we don't really hate Trae Young for any reason. We just say F Trae Young, and then Trae Young is going to hit a basket, and then, you know, everyone's going to hate Trae Young, and we're going to Reggie Miller Trae Young. That's what the game plan is going to be. Us, the Knicks, are going to Reggie Miller Trae Young, even though our team is, you know, kind of a first-round exit that might get lucky and win a playoff series because they didn't match up against the Heat or the Bucks in the first round. And then also we're going to have Mayor de Blasio just pull up and start talking smack about Trae Young and do all that weird stuff. So it feels like Knicks fans are trying hard and they care so much right now. They're just trying to cram all these playoff memories together into like 1 year right now. And you know what? Not the worst idea in the world, but after 20 years of irrelevance, apart from a Jeremy Lin run and talking about the lore of New York and the love of New York, you got to feel good for those fans in New York that they are so, so happy, but also trying so, so hard. I think too hard at this point to try and make this a thing. It's okay. We get it. It's understandable. It's cool. It is really cool. And we really do care about the New York Knicks. You guys clearly care a lot about the Knicks. You're just trying very hard to make this a thing. It was so strange that they're now vilifying Trae Young like Reggie Miller at the Garden. Because that doesn't happen anymore in the NBA. There aren't really villains anymore in the NBA. I guess Pandemic P is kind of the closest thing we have to it, but there's no one, like, universally hated or universally loved. James Harden's probably the closest thing to it. James Harden, Kyrie, maybe Kevin Durant. I'd say those guys are kind of the universally hated guys, even when they were all on different teams, not just, like, the added effect that they now all play for the Brooklyn Nets. So that's something that's interesting, but it's a second TV game, because the Islanders can eliminate the division champion Penguins tonight and advance to play the Boston Bruins, which Boston should win that series handily, but you never know with those Islanders. And, you know, we'll get to hockey in a bit, but the Maple Leafs are kind of in a similar type situation right now. We'll get to that, as I said, later on here. Also, shout out to the Battle of Florida. But we begin here with the main topic of the day. And by the way, I forgot to mention the Grizzlies Jazz game tonight, which we'll probably talk about that tomorrow on the podcast maybe. But anyways, let's get down to business. Let's talk about Luka Doncic, because Luka legend, baby, is slowly growing out of this mythical NBA playoff narrative that we can create around the Mavericks. And we talked about this a little bit on Sunday, and we've talked about the concept I want to address before here on the Take It Easy radio show. We are in a transition period in the NBA. I've been talking about this pretty prominently for about the past few weeks, but it's really true that this is a transition season for the NBA. We have the guys who dominated the late 2000s, the guys who came to define this era of basketball, whether it's Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook. I mentioned James Harden in there. James Harden, Damian Lillard, Kyrie Irving, guys who came to define the period from like 2015 to 2020. A lot of them are exiting their primes, aging out of their primes, and the players at the top of the win share rankings right now are those players that are getting ready to enter their primes or are in the middle of their primes because they're tweeners between the old generation and the new generation that's about to take its shape and enter its prime. And for those who are wondering what I mean by generations, they're not like the 15-year generations like Gen Z, millennials. I forgot, the geriatric millennial is a new term now, like people who are like 35, 36. Like technically millennials, but born from like 80 to 85. I like that term, geriatric millennials, because it comes to define like a five-year period. I do generations by 5 years. And so this generation that came of age from 2011 to 2015, that then dominated the NBA from 2016 until about 2019, 2020, kind of the symbolic end was when Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson both had like crazy injuries in the NBA finals, and Kawhi Leonard, who's a tweener between the two generations, led the team to the championship, and we're all like, okay, now it's Kawhi's league. Well, it wasn't a quick turnover. That was just the symbolic end of dominance for the LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry generation. What we're looking at now is a little in between, where the league used to be dominated by those six to eight guys we mentioned before, and now it's dominated by a mix between some of the holdovers exiting their primes, like LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. Some guys are aging out, like James Harden, Kyrie, Playoff P. A lot of those guys are starting to age out a little bit. And the young guys, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's won back-to-back MVPs, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, who I'm forgetting someone in there, sorry. Rudy Gobert, he was way up there this year. Jimmy Butler. These are people who are coming from the newer generation who are entering their primes, or in the case of Jimmy and Kawhi, they're kind of tweeners because they were drafted in 2011, and Jimmy in 2012, but he was older. Both of them were older when they left high school / college. They're kind of tweeners, but they kind of qualify for both. They're kind of between the old generation and the new generation. And then you've got Devin Booker. You've got what should be Karl Anthony Towns. He's always a fascinating case. But you've got those guys who come to define the young generation who's entering their primes at 25, 26, 27. Then you've got some tweeners, like Donovan Mitchell's a tweener, but Rudy Gobert is very much in the middle of his prime, and Jason Tatum's a tweener. So you've got some tweeners in there. Luka Doncic is very quickly becoming the face of the next generation, like the baby generation right now. It's Luka, it's Zion. Jason Tatum, like I said, is a bit of a tweener. Donovan Mitchell is a little bit of a tweener. It's Trae Young. That's the baby generation. That they are nowhere near entering their primes, but they're starting to establish themselves as dominant factors. It's like in 2012 when Kevin Durant, at 23 years old, won the Western Conference over the San Antonio Spurs with 23-year-old KD, 22-year-old Russell Westbrook, and 21-year-old James Harden. It was really a weird thing to see these babies make it to the NBA. There's little precedent. Every now and then there's a story like that that comes around. The Oklahoma City Thunder, the 1990s Orlando Magic, the original San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan in 1999. Like, it comes around every so often. You've got one of these stories of people entering their primes, or at the very least, peaking at a time where we don't expect players to peak, like, you know, Kobe Bryant at 24, 25, Jason Tatum at 21, going one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, and Luka Doncic right now basically breaking every playoff record for a player 22 or younger. Like, we're talking, like, the presidents are Magic Johnson and LeBron James, and he's breaking those records in terms of, like, triple-doubles and, you know, playoff record and points per game and assists per game. Like, the dude almost averages a triple-double while scoring close to 30 points. Like, Luka Doncic is remarkably good. And him and Zion are the faces of the baby generation. And Trae Young's right there, too. So we'll throw Luka, Zion, Trae Young. Those are the babies. Those are the faces of the baby generation. Like, we've got the old generation, the new generation, and then they're the babies. But the thing that's been so remarkable, it looks like baby Luka is the chosen one. Like, baby Luka is going to be that Oklahoma City run. He's going to be Shaq on the Orlando Magic. He's going to be Kevin Durant on the Thunder. Like, Luka very clearly is separating himself from the pack at an age that we don't expect players to do it, but also recognizing that Luka has a very different path that did not exist realistically. I mean, it could have theoretically existed, but it did not realistically exist even 10 years ago, nonetheless 25 years ago. And that is that Luka Doncic has been playing professional basketball in the biggest leagues in the world since he was 15 years old. Luka Doncic went to Spain, arguably the second biggest league in the world. You could argue that Spain and China and Australia would be the biggest basketball leagues in the world. And Luka Doncic went there at 17 years old, and at 19 years old won finals MVP in the Spanish league at 19 years old. And this was the thing that got us all onto the Luka Doncic radar, was the 2018 draft, where we knew DeAndre Ayton, we knew Marvin Bagley, and then everyone talked about, hey, there's this kid from Europe named Luka Doncic who's going to be a top two pick in the NBA draft. And nobody had seen him play. Everyone here is like, oh, Luka Doncic is a guy, Jonathan Givony, who's ESPN's NBA draft analyst, says is really good. Like, this guy's going to be a top three pick in the draft and should be the number one pick in the draft. But no one's seen him play. He's playing over in Europe, and he's playing professionally in the second biggest Spanish league. And, you know, for guys like Giannis, who, you know, he played a lot in Greek ball before playing 1 year in Spain before going to the NBA. Like, Giannis came from Europe and played pro ball over there, but was more of a role player over there. Like, he was coming of age. He was the young guy. He was 17 years old trying to play in some of these pro leagues and play for the Greek national team and things like that. And Nikola Jokic, to an even bigger extent, he came from Serbia, and he played – Nikola Jokic at 19 years old averaged 1.9 points per game on the Serbian national team. And what got Jokic drafted even late in the second round was just the skill set and the promise of, like, hey, this guy's not contributing very much, but you look at his raw athletic ability and his skill sets, and there's something there, at the very least, to throw a second-round pick at the wind. And, you know, like DK Metcalf only having 11 catches at Ole Miss, well, you just look at his skill set and say, yeah, there's something there. And I always say now in the NFL, like, the guys who they don't have a lot of gaudy stats, like they don't have a lot working for them on the stat lines, those are the people that you want to draft on your team, so the people who don't necessarily have the crazy stat lines. Because who know more than we do are seeing something in a random person who doesn't have a lot of, like, crazy stats. And so Jokic at 19 was scoring 1.9 points per game in the Serbian league, and Giannis at 18 was coming off the bench for one of these Spanish teams, and it was the first time he had played some level of organized basketball. Where Luka even differs from the European players and is, you know, dramatically different from the American high school and college system, is that he's playing professional basketball at 15, 16, much like soccer does it in Spain. And I think he played for FC Barcelona, if I remember correctly. It was either Real Madrid or FC Barcelona. And Luka, by 17, is starting on these teams, and at 18 is starting on a team that can win the championship and make a deep run and is one of the big contributors on that team. And so by 19, Luka Doncic is the best player on these teams. He's had 4 years of professional experience and won finals MVP of the Spanish league in 2018. Yeah, 2018. So Luka Doncic, they're saying, you know, could, should, would be the number one pick. It's a toss-up between him and Ayton, who will be better. And so Phoenix ends up taking Ayton, which I said at the time, I mean, it's the NBA designed the, I mean, I always joke that the NBA lottery is rigged, but, and it's a whole thing, but the NBA lottery was designed so that the number one pick Phoenix Suns could get number one pick DeAndre Ayton. They could get the Arizona kid. Well, not Arizona kid. He's from the Bahamas, went to the University of Arizona. It was designed so that Phoenix, who had the best odds in the last lottery that had 25% chance of getting the pick, that Arizona kid could go play for the Phoenix Suns. It's a good business decision if he becomes a superstar, which most people assume he would. And to DeAndre Ayton's credit, he's averaging 20-10 in his third season in the NBA. Like, he is far from a bust. He'll unfortunately just be remembered as the guy who was drafted before Luka Doncic. Marvin Bagley, he's going to look like Sam Bowie, though. Like, Marvin Bagley, that one's going to set the Kings back for a long time. With the fact that they had the chance to draft Luka, the chance to change their franchise's fortunes and pair Luka with De'Aaron Fox. And, yeah, they definitely botched that one. That one is going to live in infamy for them, like Greg Oden and Sam Bowie. It's kind of remarkable how it works, right? Like, if you think back to the 84 draft where you had – big man Akeem Olajuwon, number one, power forward Sam Bowie, number two, and then shooting guard Michael Jordan, number three, and number two forward was just a catastrophic bust. And you look at the parallels between that and 2018, this should probably be a meme now that I say it out loud. The 2018 to 1984 draft resemblance. So the idea that you have a center number one, DeAndre Ayton, you have a forward number two who gets injured and ends up becoming an all-time bust, Sam Bowie or Marvin Bagley. And you have number three pick, Luka Doncic, technically a point guard, but you could classify him as a shooting guard, and Michael Jordan. Luka's more of a positionless guard, to be frank. You could technically call him a forward, too. But Luka ends up being that number three pick, and Luka is, because of that level of contribution, we like to think that Luka Doncic is years ahead of being 22 because of that professional experience. And not always does that matter. Mario Hezonja had a ton of international experience, and it didn't work out for him in Orlando. With Luka Doncic's case, Luka, you look up and you say, oh, that guy is unreal at such a young age. And like I said, it's not uncommon. I mean, it is very uncommon for the babies to end up establishing themselves this early. It's a sign that there's something special there, like Shaquille O'Neal and the Orlando Magic, or Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And shout out to Penny Hardaway, like, injuries kind of sapped his career. He was on his way to a Hall of Fame career, but they happen every now and then where you've got that guy, or Tim Duncan, maybe the most talented prospect in the history of the NBA, and maybe you can make an argument, post Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of my lifetime. I mean, Michael Jordan, I'll throw the respect out there, but like, for Tim Duncan, the best basketball player of the 21st century? Pretty sure. So for the best basketball player of the 21st century, Tim Duncan, Kevin Durant, and Shaquille O'Neal, those guys get that special exemption where they're so good that they're just light years ahead of everyone else. And LeBron James, too. LeBron James made the NBA Finals at 23, 24, I want to say. Let's see. LeBron James, 2007 Finals. Let's see how old LeBron James is right now. LeBron James, let's see. LeBron James, age. LeBron's 36, that was 14 years ago. LeBron made the finals at 22 years old. So LeBron made the finals at 22. Duncan made the finals at 22. KD made the finals at 23. Shaquille O'Neal made the finals at 23. Like, so there's these exemptions for these once-in-a-lifetime talents. And I'm starting to look at Luka and saying, yes, Jalen Brunson and Tim Hardaway are there, but like, the fact they're 2-0 up against the Clippers, the Clippers were playing at home, and they get the Jazz in the next round. Like, is it crazy to think Dallas can make a run here? With how good Luka is right now, is it crazy to say Dallas can make a run in a Western Conference where now they're eradicating the Clippers? So if you take out the Jazz, the only thing that's left are the Lakers and the Nuggets. And if you put the Nuggets against the Mavericks, you're not going to tell me that the Mavericks can't win that series. If you put the Mavericks against the Lakers, yeah, it's going to be a test, but it's already a massive success. Like, if you can beat the Clippers, you can beat the Jazz, and the Jazz are really good, no question, but Donovan Mitchell's been out a month, and, you know, there's lots of stuff there. But if they can crush the Clippers, and to the point about the Clippers being down, so 31 teams in the history of the NBA have lost their first two games at home, and only four of them have come back to win the series. And I think of the four, it's like Tracy McGrady did it to the Dallas Mavericks one year, the Celtics and the Heat in the early 2010s. Like, there's a few examples in throughout there. And there's no, like, obviously any winning four out of five is difficult, especially when you play three of them on the road. And so maybe the Clippers come back and win, and this ends up being a letdown, and Luka's progression takes time. But we're starting to recognize that Luka might be LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Shaquille O'Neal, Tim Duncan. Is it crazy to start saying that? I don't think it's crazy to start saying that now that they're up 2-0 in Los Angeles. They're going to knock out Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, which the Clippers curse, if you don't believe in the Clippers curse, you better start believing. The San Diego sports curse will never leave you, Clippers. The Donald Sterling, whatever you want to call it, San Diego sports curse will live on forever in your lore and in your history. Like, sorry, not sorry. That's just kind of how it's got to be for the Los Angeles Clippers. You guys still get to deal with the San Diego sports curse. There is no escaping the San Diego sports curse. No way to escape it. And so the Los Angeles Clippers are one of those major threats. We talked about this on the podcast. The Clippers had the second highest net rating in the league and the second best strength of record so far in through the entire 2021 regular season. The Clippers were really, really good throughout the season. And so the Lakers, being the other threat there, are on shaky ground. And after that, it's the Jazz. And if it's none of those three teams, well, then it's a crapshoot because all these teams are just second-round exits anyways. The Suns, the Nuggets, the Mavericks, there's very little discerning all of them, and none of them should make the conference finals. Like, they're all second-round exits at that point. So at that point, it's just a crapshoot because you've taken out the three teams that actually have a chance to, like, win the Western Conference. The Lakers and the Clippers are the two elite teams just because of the stars that they have. But if you look at Utah, I talked about this, Utah can slip through the cracks. Like, Utah is good enough where if the Clippers and Lakers start stumbling, they can slip through the cracks. But now Dallas is trying to slip through the cracks. If they're going to eliminate the Clippers and the Lakers got a duel with the Suns, and we have no idea what's going to happen in the West. And the fact we have no idea in the West, if I told you the one series that you felt most confident in going into this series, going into this playoffs, what's the one series you would have felt most confident in? Because for me, it was Clippers are going to beat the Mavericks. They might do it in six. They might do it in seven. But the Clippers are going to beat the Mavericks. And I look up right now and I say, oh, shit, the Clippers are screwed. The Clippers are screwed because even though they're second in net rating and second in strength of record, and strength of record is the stat that most resembles the eye test for teams, even though they're second in strength of record, they're also extremely dependent on Kawhi Leonard. And let me read some of the statistics off real quick right here on the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers were fourth in offensive rating and eighth in defensive rating this last season. They are dependent on Kawhi Leonard as he leads the team in win shares per 48, offensive win shares by a significant margin, by the way, and defensive win shares. And, oh, by the way, in that win shares per 48 stat, Ivica Zubac was ahead of Paul George this year. So they are extremely dependent on Kawhi Leonard, and we saw it yesterday. Kawhi Leonard, the Mavericks dropped 71 points in the first half against the Clippers because there's no defensive chance that they've got against them. Patrick Beverley, I heard Lee Ellis on No Dunks, shout out to them. He basically said, like, just tell Patrick Beverley to stay home at this point going into the next game. Like, it's been an atrocious ride for the Clippers. And, you know, Terrence Mann was giving them a bunch of offense at the end of the game. But despite all of those shortcomings and 71 points from Dallas, the Clippers had the lead at halftime. They were up 73-71 because Kawhi Leonard put up 30 in the first half. He was on pace to go for 60 and try and carry them to the victory. And he finished with 41, which is, you know, it's all right. Like, it's the second half was average Kawhi Leonard, but it wasn't enough. And it was like Tim Hardaway was cooking him. And I heard Tim Hardaway is the perfect, like, get $100 million from the Pacers. I'm pretty sure that's going to happen now. It's like, it would be too perfect for Tim Hardaway to just be that dude that gets $100 million to shoot some threes like a Bogdanovich. Tim Hardaway is carving out a role as a Bogdanovich. I'll say that. Tim Hardaway gets to be a temporary Bogdanovich for the remainder of the postseason. I hereby dub Tim Hardaway an honorary Bogdanovich. So with that being said, it's Tim Hardaway. Game one, Jalen Brunson had 13 points in the fourth quarter. Like, it's these random guys and Luka's 30-point triple-doubles that get Mavericks to a victory. Because, again, Luka is hitting some of these, like, weird step-back, like, driveway Dirk shots that Jokic hits all the time. But Luka has been incredible so far in the first two games of the series. Game one against the Clippers, he had 31, 10, and 11. And then yesterday he had 39, 7, and 7. So he's averaging 35 points, 8.5 assists, or 8.5 rebounds, and 9 assists. Luka's averaging 35, 9, and 8.5 in the playoffs. Like, Luka Doncic is unbelievable right now. And during the regular season, it's not that far off from his regular season statistics. Like, he might come back down to earth with a bad game here that the Clippers end up winning. But it's not crazy to say if they beat the Clippers, they can beat the Jazz. Like, they can beat the Utah Jazz. And at that point, then it's Luka pulling up to the conference finals at 22 years old. And who are the precedent of 22-year-olds that made runs to the NBA finals? It's like Magic Johnson. Well, let's say modern era. Like, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, different. So let's say modern era post-1990. Shaquille O'Neal led a team to the finals at 22. Tim Duncan, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. And is it crazy at this point to put Luka Doncic near that category? Yes. But he's not that far off. And we're starting to see it right now, beginning around game two. And the Mavericks, you know, this could end up being an epic collapse, and the old heads end up establishing, well, I guess Kawhi Leonard's the tweener, so he's kind of the modern guy, but he could be aging out quickly because of his chronic knee injuries. But it's not, is it crazy to look at this and say, Luka has just as good a chance as anyone if he can knock out the Clippers, which is started. We have to start preparing for that reality at the very least. We need to start preparing for the reality that Luka Doncic and the Mavericks are going to beat the Los Angeles Clippers. I think it's not that crazy. I think it's a reality that we are very much going to start preparing for very, very soon. It's like near future situation. We're going to start preparing for Luka Doncic and the Clippers to start taking over a little bit here. I'm sorry, Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, if they beat the Clippers, to start taking over just a little bit. It is a real reality that we can have to start preparing for at the very least, that Luka Doncic, although he's part of this baby generation, can do things that only Shaq, Tim Duncan, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant have done. And making the conference final would be good enough for me. Like, if he could go on that crazy run and lose to the Lakers or lose to the Nuggets, like, you're good, bro. You're good with me. You're all good, man. But if he gets the Nuggets in the conference finals, there's no reason that the Mavericks can't win that series. No reason at all that Dallas cannot win that series. And I know it's looking way far ahead, but at the same time, if you've been watching these games at this point, we kind of have to start preparing for this reality, because it's looking like the Mavericks are going to advance against the Clippers. They're up 2-0 after two games in Los Angeles as victories, and the Clippers are falling apart at the seam right now. We need to start preparing for this reality that Luka Doncic, with his second year of playoff experience under his belt, is that bad man. That only Shaq in Orlando, Timmy in San Antonio, LeBron in Cleveland, and Kevin Durant in OKC have done. Make a deep playoff run at 22 and 23 years old. All right, let's talk Nuggets and Blazers, even though they don't play tonight. This is something that was kind of just hanging over me a little bit from last time. The Nuggets fans are still booing Carmelo Anthony. After 9 years, we are seeing a Nuggets booing party in this series with the Portland Trail Blazers. And it's kind of weird because you would think that for the Nuggets who, you know, Carmelo Anthony turned his back on the fans and it stings. I was listening to some Nuggets fans talk about this. It's kind of how sports work, right? He said, like, a player leaves and spurns a city, and then the city spurns him. And I'm like, that seems like a very cynical way to see sports work. And it's also one of those things that I think is kind of dumb about sports, is that if you don't deliver a championship, that all of a sudden it's over for you. But he did, Carmelo Anthony did single-handedly set the Nuggets franchise back about 20 or so years. Like this, or not 20 or so years, 2 to 5 years. So this is a very real situation for the Nuggets. Like, I think they did like slightly better than the Knicks after Carmelo left. But let's pull up Denver Nuggets finishes, like, after, like, to make exactly sure what we're talking about. And to be fair to the Nuggets, like, the losing post-Carmelo netted them Jamal Murray, was a product of that losing, but it was also like Emmanuel Mudiay, and that didn't end up working out very well for them. Like, they had some bad ones in there. So they lost Carmelo, and then they made the playoffs a couple times. So, like, they traded Carmelo, and then they snuck into the playoffs and got knocked out by the Lakers. Then they were a 3 seed in 2013. This was the end of George Karl. Like, they were like, oh, my goodness, look at this Nuggets team. And then they lost to the original Warriors team. So they got bounced in the first round a few times after the peak of Carmelo Anthony, which conference finals run against they went, like, 7 games with Kobe Bryant. I remember that. But they made a run to the conference finals where, like, they beat Driveway Dirk and then lost to the Lakers. I remember that, watching that series at home. I felt like the Jazz were involved somewhere in there. But the imagine the temptation for the Jazz, where they went a decade of just first-round loss, first-round loss, first-round loss. So they draft Carmelo in 03. First year, 8 seed, losing the first round. Second year, Melo, 7 seed, losing the first round. 2006, 3 seed, won the division, losing the first round. 2007, 6 seed, losing the first round. 2008, 8 seed, sneaking into the playoffs, swept in the first round. 2009, they put it all together. Number 2 seed, that's the conference finals run. Next year, 4th seed, first place in the division, losing the first round. 2011, last year with Carmelo, 5th seed, losing the first round. 2012, trade Carmelo, still get the 6th seed, which is a byproduct of the West being shitty at that point, but get to the first round, lose to the Lakers. 2013, 3 seed, almost won the division, won 57 games, better than any season with Carmelo, losing the first round to the Warriors, who end up springboarding a dynasty. And then that's when Carmelo sets the franchise back from there, where you have, like, 11th in the West, 12th in the West, 11th in the West, 9th, like, but the losing ends up netting them, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay, which didn't work out, and Jamal Murray, and Jokic ends up being a second-round pick in 2014. So the losing ends up netting the new generation. They get Nurkic in there. Like, they also traded Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, so that didn't work out so hot for them either. But it ends up setting the new generation in motion for the Denver Nuggets. And Denver made a lot of mistakes, but everyone makes mistakes. No one is smarter than anyone else. People just end up being luckier than other people in a lot of these circumstances. Everyone has access to relatively the same information, and the Nuggets made good picks. They took Jamal Murray at pick 7, but they also made some bad picks. They traded the pick that became Rudy Gobert, and they traded the pick that became Donovan Mitchell, and they drafted Emmanuel Mudiay. So they made some mistakes in there as well. But ultimately, the franchise was set back a little bit. They rebuilt. They got an MVP in Jokic. And they got Jamal Murray, and then ultimately they also got Michael Porter Jr. for their troubles once everything was starting to come together. And now they're good again. And it's been 9 seasons since Carmelo's last year with the New York Knicks. I'm sorry, with the Denver Nuggets. And I was just surprised that they still made the boos and still felt the animosity towards Carmelo when it's been more years since he last played for them than when Carmelo was drafted. And in the grand lore of NBA history, Melo's Nuggets days are going to end up being an afterthought the further away we get removed from it. It's the same way we think about Chris Paul on the Clippers. Like, Chris Paul is going to end up being famous on the Clippers, but because he's had, let's see, 1, 2, 3 different stops since then with the Rockets, the Thunder, and the Suns, and we remember Chris Paul on the Hornets, which is even further removed than the Clipper days, you know, it's a little bit of an afterthought in the grand lore of his career because he's been in so many different stops. And it's a different generation, and there's a coming-of-age thing. And this is where Carmelo came of age, was around those Nuggets teams and the 2009 teams that had, you know, like Carmelo Anthony being the star player, but they had the Birdman. They had Chauncey Billups. They had, you know, Kenyon Martin, Al Harrington, Nene. Those teams that I used to play with all the freaking time on NBA 2K11, like those Nuggets teams end up being the coming of age tale for Denver and Carmelo Anthony and company. But there's still the animosity there a decade later, and I was surprised of that. And as great as the Nuggets teams were, and I'll remember that starting lineup forever because I played a franchise mode season with the Denver Nuggets where I had, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Chauncey Billups, Aaron Affalo was on those teams, Al Harrington, Kenyon Martin, Malik Allen, Ronaldo Balkman, they had all those different dudes on the Nuggets, and J.R. Smith obviously gets traded with Carmelo later on. So they get Gallinari out of it, et cetera, et cetera. But what's interesting for the Denver Nuggets is the bitterness for Carmelo probably revolves on how it ended, where he basically forced his way out and forced his way to the New York Knicks. And probably there's still some animosity there. Like, it's understandable in that respect. I find it fascinating that it was still like the boos were still there, that this is something that's going to feel more irrelevant. And for the Nuggets, like, you found your new Carmelo. Like, Jokic is going to win the MVP. Like, you found this different level of success to it. And so the fact that they wanted to aggressively boo Carmelo in the playoffs, it was fascinating that that's still something that's remembered and, like, held on to by Denver fans. And so, you know, the booing of Carmelo caught me off guard, and something that, like, they did make a Western Conference Finals, which is huge by Nuggets standards. Like, the most memorable thing for the Nuggets before that was when they beat the one seed Supersonics in 1994. Like, it's that and a lot of, like, first-round exits. That's all Denver history at this point. It's just, you know, the 1980s when they were first being established, and after that, not a lot. A lot of losing seasons, a lot of tie draft picks, like one that allows you to get Carmelo Anthony, a lot of losing seasons in there that ultimately produce a lot of first-round exits. So the conference finals is a huge deal by Nuggets standards. But since then, they've made a second round and went to seven games with the Blazers. They went to the conference finals last year, and they're in a pretty good position to make a conference finals run this year because Michael Porter Jr., we're finding out, is more talented than Jamal Murray. But at the same time, they still got the animosity for Carmelo, which part of that might be they found this level of success. And at a certain point, I was just kind of caught off guard by the pettiness. It was just something I was not prepared for to see at that first Nuggets-Blazers game. And something that I wanted to carry over here to the Take It Easy radio show is, like, yes, it is the way that sports work. It's a weird way that sports work. And you know, Melo's Nuggets time becomes more irrelevant as NBA history passes on. And, you know, Melo's not, you know, a star anymore. Like, he's, you know, sixth guy down the line for the Portland Trail Blazers or fifth guy down the line for the Blazers. But it's still interesting to see that level of animosity that's still held just a little bit towards Carmelo Anthony. So, yeah. All right. Let's get douchey hockey guy in here to talk about the NHL right now, because I want to talk about the Canada first. I'm going to go through the four divisions of playoffs here on the NHL douchey hockey guy segment. To be honest, I just want to use this segment just for my own personal benefit, to organize my thoughts around the NHL right now, because you've got three game sixes tonight, a game six tomorrow, which almost I thought was going to be like the most NHL-style upset when the Predators beat the Hurricanes, but then the Canes went to double overtime in game three, double overtime in game four, and double overtime in game five, and the Preds won the first two, but then the Hurricanes, you know, snuck one past old Pecorine. And the Nashville Predators, I hope it's still Pecorine. It's going to make me sad if it's not Pecorine in the goal for the Nashville Predators. Oh, it's Jose Saros. That's unfortunate. Is Pecorine still a Nashville Predator? It's going to be sad if Pecorine is not a Nashville Predator. No, he's still a Nashville Predator. He's just injured on the bench. I don't know. One of the two. Let's see. Pecorine is, he's just, I think, hurt / on the bench this year. So hopefully Pecorine gets back in there. Anyways, oh, he's also kind of old. But anyway, so I thought it was going to be shocking and, like, the Hurricanes were going to lose to the Predators. But that series has been fun, and that's actually the Central Division presented by Discover Card. So while we're here, let's talk about the Central Division presented by Discover Card. So the Hurricanes are now up 3-2. They'll play Game 6 tomorrow. The Battle of Florida come tonight's, like, end of the series. Like, put the kids to bed. This is it for Panthers Lightning. Like, Lightning better not lose this one and force a game seven against Carolina. They've got Spencer Knight in there now. I know that. The Tampa Bay's got Kucherov and obviously Stamkos and Vasilevsky as the stars, but they were scoring a lot of points, whether it be Yanni Gord or company, or, you know, the rest of those guys for Tampa Bay. they were scoring a lot early in the series, and Spencer Knight kind of came in 19 years old and locked the doors. Now, Spencer Knight is younger than me, which is crazy for me to think about, that dude coming in and saving the series for the Panthers at home. Tampa better not let this one go seven. Like, you've got to finish off the Panthers in Tampa tonight. Like, you cannot, will not let this one go seven games if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, because 3-1 comebacks are way more common in hockey than they are in baseball and in the NHL. It's more common than the NBA in baseball to have a 3-1 comeback. So one game samples in hockey are just like crapshoots, just utter crapshoot. So you got to win this one if you're Tampa. Just don't leave it up to fate and a toss up in the last game, and a momentum swing, of course. So that's the Central Division presented by Discover Card. Now the North Division presented by Scotiabank. So the Maple Leafs are going to end up beating the Canadiens. It was looking scary there for a moment. Like, the Canadiens won game one. John Tavares went out for the series. It was looking scary for a half second there for those Toronto Maple Leafs. But they've ended up doing what we all expected the Maple Leafs would do, which is, let's see, game two, 5-1, crushed the Montreal Canadiens, who really, like, they had a good season, but they're there kind of by default. They're because the Flames were disappointing and the Canucks were disappointing. Like, they're kind of just there by default at this point in the Canada division. Game three, Maple Leafs win 2-1 in regulation. They probably should have been more. Yesterday, 4-0. Like, the Maple Leafs do what the Maple Leafs should have been doing the whole time, which is dominate. And we were so ready for the Maple Leafs to play against Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, second round of the playoffs. It was going to be the series of the second round, and nope. Connor McDavid got swept out by the Winnipeg Jets, who are one of the few hockey teams right now that I cannot name one of the players on the Winnipeg Jets. Just, I knew they had Patrick Laine. I don't know who they have now. Just can't. Let me just go through the Winnipeg roster and see if I recognize anyone, because I doubt I will recognize anyone on the Winnipeg Jets right now. Let's see. Dubois, I don't know if he's any good. Oh, Hellebuyck, the goalie, I kind of remember that name. But yeah, yeah, not a lot of people that I recognize on the Winnipeg Jets. Definitely don't recognize a lot of the names. So Winnipeg is definitely in a position where, you know, they're kind of just waiting and seeing what's going to happen with Toronto. And for those who don't know, the Maple Leafs have been the Chicago Cubs of hockey. They haven't won the championship since the 60s. They're closer to New York Knicks than anything else because they're not run super well as an organization, but they make a lot of money, kind of like the Cubs and the New York Knicks, where they had irrelevancy for a long time, and then over time the Toronto Maple Leafs just kind of like fell to obscurity, as a lot of Canada has. A Canada team hasn't won the Stanley Cup final since 1994. And so, in the cases of the Toronto Maple Leafs, they did end up getting that gift of number one pick Austin Matthews, who is one of those like amazing superstars in hockey. And they signed John Tavares and they trade for Jake Muzzin. Like, they do a bunch of stuff to make themselves relevant, and they have good leadership and well competent organization, and they get some nice breaks, like having a lot of money, signing John Tavares and drafting Austin Matthews. You have that combination of cheap, young, good talent, great talent, number one pick talent, team to supplement. And now they put it all together in being the number one seed in the weakest division in the NHL, which is the North Division presented by Scotiabank. And so we thought they were going to get the duel with Connor McDavid. Now they get the duel with the Winnipeg Jets, but it looks like we're paving the way for the Maple Leafs to coast to the conference finals. And the fact that the Maple Leafs are even in the conference finals is very anti-Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, the Maple Leafs are the team that chokes, and they're the team that ends up falling just short every single time they make the playoffs. And so Toronto being this close to where we feel like they can kind of taste the conference finals, Toronto making the Final Four is going to be something that's like the New York Knicks making the conference finals, or the Chicago Cubs when they made the NLCS in 2015 and then won the whole thing in 16. But really, the first run in 15 is what I'm thinking about, where everyone's got like these emotions bubbling to the surface, and Toronto is going to be really good and really interesting, it's going to get really close towards the end. And I think Toronto is kind of moving towards that position right now. They're getting closer and closer to that point right now. And I think Toronto is much closer than we think right now. Toronto might make this nice little run here. And they are, you know, they're going to beat Montreal, but they're inching closer, and they get to play the Winnipeg Jets, which, just because I don't know someone on the Winnipeg Jets, is not really an indictment of the Winnipeg Jets. It's just that I do know enough about hockey to usually name the best player on each of the good teams. And the fact that I can't get one on Winnipeg is a tough thing for them. But who knows? Maybe the no-names and the bunch of jerks, which is Carolina, will end up rolling their way through the playoffs. And that'll be fun to see. So that's the North Division presented by Scotiabank. The East Division presented by, I think, MassMutual. MassMutual sponsors the East Division. One of the series is done. Boston and Washington got started early for the national TV purposes. Ended in five games. Boston gets a nice long break. This is especially helped for them by the fact that the Islanders might pull off the upset against the Penguins. And if you didn't watch Game 5 Islanders-Pens on Monday, I'm sorry, you missed out. Game 5, game for your lives in Pittsburgh, double overtime, and the Islanders beat the Penguins in a game that they weren't supposed to win, but it's hockey, so you get to a certain point where just randomization plays into effect. But still, like 70% of the time, whoever wins, or 75% of the time, which is exactly what you'd expect if you do toss-ups every game. Like if you have a 3-2 series, and you flip the coin on who's going to win game six. 50-50 shot that the team who is going to – 50-50 shot that the team already ahead wins the series. So if they win, that's a 50% chance they win, 50% chance we go to a game seven. If you flip a coin in game seven, that makes it so that there's a 50% chance of the remaining 50%, 25% chance that the team – this is just probabilities right now. So of the remaining 50% chance – there's a 25% chance that team that was up 3-2 wins, 25% chance that the team who loses the previous game goes up 3-2. So with that being said, there's a 75% chance the Islanders do win this series, even though the Penguins are the better team, because they won that elusive Game 5 in double overtime that both teams knew they had to win. And to be honest, this is definitely the division in hockey. If the North Division is the weakest division in hockey, the East Division presented by MassMutual is the best division in hockey this year. And I know this from not watching a single regular season hockey game, but seeing the names, seeing the teams, and knowing from past experience and hearing stories about who's on what team, the East Division presented by MassMutual is your best division in hockey. And the fact that the two-seeded Capitals are out of here, and that the one-seeded Penguins with Sidney Crosby might end up being out of here, is a shocking turn of events that might come true within the next 2 hours, because that game starts at 3:30 on the West Coast, which is less than 2 hours from when we are recording this show right now. So that's going to be really interesting. And, of course, as I said, the Bruins already advanced. Then we go to the West Division presented by Honda. If I had told you series that was probably the biggest blowout to start off, would have been the one that ended up happening between the Colorado Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues. Avalanche, Nate MacKinnon, Stanley Cup favorites every year. They have awesome regular seasons. They have one of the best rosters and one of the cheapest payrolls in the NHL. Colorado is set up to be a potential dynasty once they take the reins from Tampa and Boston, who kind of run the NHL right now. But the NHL itself is in a transition period, going from Tampa and Boston dominating the sport to whoever's next going to dominate the sport, now that we look back on it with hindsight, which is kind of what I said in 2019, but they're now in another transition period because hockey legislates parity very well. So Avalanche swept the Blues, no surprise there. Golden Knights were well on their way to winning the series against the Minnesota Wild, and the Golden Knights and Avalanche are definitely the two best teams in the West Division presented by Honda. And the Golden Knights are coasting along. They're up 3-1. We expect that they'll win the series. And then the Wild punched them in the mouth in Game 5. Like, they scored a ton on Marc-Andre Fleury. So the Wild are now in 3-2. And they play tonight at 6 o'clock in Minnesota for Game 6. And just like the Panthers-Lightning series, you don't want to go back to Vegas if you're the Golden Knights. You want to go back to Vegas. Yes, you want to go home, but you want to board that flight from Minnesota to Colorado. You don't want to board that flight from Minnesota to Las Vegas. You want to walk out tonight, because if it goes to Game 7, same situation we talked about in Panthers-Lightning, same situation we talked about in Islanders and Penguins. It's a coin flip. And if you're Vegas, who went from up 3-1 in the series, gets routed in Game 5, the Penguins and Islanders series, which had an epically close Game 5, if you get routed and punched in the mouth in Game 5 and you lose Game 6 in Minnesota, coin flip game. And nobody likes a coin flip game, especially if you're the favorite in the series. And like Vegas, a heavy favorite who had expectations of winning this series and moving on to get the epic duel with the Colorado Avalanche. And now the Golden Knights are in a Game 6, feeling pretty good about themselves. Like, they were up 3-1, they're still up 3-2. But in the back of their minds, like with the Clippers, you know, you're sweating a little bit. You got some sweat rolling down the back of your neck. You're not exactly sure how this one's going to play out. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Three Game 6s tonight. Those will be dominating my focus. And on the second TV, you can find the Hawks and Knicks. And you can find that you'll find me maybe staying up late enough to watch the maybe I'll stay up late and watch the Grizzlies-Jazz game, or maybe I'll just watch the highlights tomorrow. Probably watch the highlights tomorrow now that I think about it. But maybe I'll stay up late. Maybe I'll put out the Take It Easy podcast then. Who knows? You'll have to stop in with us and check it out and see how things end up going. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Sports with Stakes are back, people, and I am excited. This was a fun week, fun 5 days of going around the sports landscape. Again, follow us on the Take It Easy podcast on Instagram, Take It Easy Podcast, and Comical Sports Memes. Of course, Open Talk Radio. Subscribe to the YouTube, which just ended, by the way. So shout out to everyone who did stop in on YouTube. They can't hear this anymore. And follow the podcast that's coming out soon. But if you want the full link to that, again, check the Instagram if you want to find all our cool stuff. Also, if you were watching on YouTube, if you want to buy a t-shirt or a jacket, buy some merch from us down there over on Take It Easy. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here today. Until tomorrow, when we will update all those games we talked about today, take it easy.